We moved to Riverside in 1944 out of Great Falls, Montana, because of my father's health. I graduated from Riverside Polytechnic High School in June of 1953, and incredibly enough, UCR, of course I knew this about a year in advance, UCR opened up in February of 1954, and in the first class, UCR, the charter students, there were 125 of us, and I think there's about 20,000 there now. So the campus has changed considerably since 1954. I majored in biology. I was going to be a doctor, going to go to Berkeley and go to medical school. I had reserve time that I had to serve on active duty, so I was going to do that immediately after graduating from college from UCR. Learned with my degree that if I went to OCS, Officer Candidate School in Newport, Rhode Island, I could get a commission, and adding one more year to my active duty time, I'd serve my duty for 3 years as an officer. So I said, hey, that sounds like a pretty good idea. So I did that, and never once thinking that I was going to change my career pattern. I was still going to get out of school, go to medical school, get out of the Navy and go to medical school. But once I was in the Navy and went aboard a heavy cruiser initially, I enjoyed sea duty immensely, navigation, all of the, every day was totally different, constant stress, but yet thoroughly enjoyable. So I changed my career pattern and decided to make the Navy my career. 6 different ships, several commands, and of course command of this squadron of river gunboats. We were, the river gunboats in Vietnam were known as the Brown Water Navy because of the turbulence of the Mekong River that flows down from the Himalaya Mountains. Boiling water, constantly bringing up mud, brown water, all the time brown. The emphasis was upon the Mekong Delta because the communists and North Vietnamese Navy, North Vietnamese forces were coming out of Cambodia and into Vietnam, and they wanted to take Saigon. The boats that I had were a new type of boat that was not in the Delta. They were known as strike assault boats, and they were, first of all, they had high speed. We could go from dead in the water to 40 knots in about 10 seconds, 10 to 15 seconds, incredible. If the crew weren't holding on, they'd be thrown out of the boat. They were very low silhouette. They're only about 3.5 feet of the, about 4 feet of the boat was above water, and there was no canopy whatsoever on the boat. And then the third thing was they were very quiet operation. We had 2 boat engines. They were gasoline engines, but because they were gas, they were quiet, and then they were each highly soundproofed, so they wouldn't make any noise. We could literally just move in quietly into a shoreline, and you'd never hear the boats whatsoever. They were so that quiet, and so they were good for strike warfare. You could come in if there were lots of reeds in the area you were coming in. The enemy would never see you because you'd be coming in very slowly, very quietly. And then suddenly you had a great deal of gunpowder. You could hit the enemy quickly and then get out of there very quickly before they had a chance to respond. It was a nighttime war in the Delta. They had a lot of daytime battles, I know, up further north, up in the I Corps, but down in the IV Corps, it was a nighttime battle. And the reason for that was that the NVA, North Vietnamese Army, and the Viet Cong forces, the indigenous communists, would come out of their sanctuaries in Cambodia, and they would come south, and they would attempt to cross these rivers and canals that interlace the Delta and get to Saigon. That was their whole attempt. The emphasis was upon stopping them from getting down there. we had a string of canals that crossed the complete delta from the Gulf of Thailand all the way to Saigon. Down to the Grand Canal, this was known as Operation Barrier Reef. This was my operation where we had the 40-mile-long canal, Operation Barrier Reef, to the Vam Co Tay down here and up the other arm here. Along this entire lane, there was a boat every kilometer, every night, for about 5 years. Very few people really know that that was going, that we had that. That was to stop the enemy forces from getting to Saigon. And it worked. It actually stopped them. From 73 to 75, there was practically no attempted crossings. And what ultimately happened was we had ambushes set up every kilometer along that canal, along these canals and the rivers, about 400 boats a night. Every night there would be boats along these canals and waterways to stop the enemy from moving south. And so our war was at night. NASA and all of the great things that they did had developed what became the night vision devices that the police and fire people nowadays use. It was initially built and utilized in, we used it, and we were some of the first people to ever utilize it, as what we called a starlight scope. And it looked like a telescope. You held it up your eye, and you looked through it, and you were able to see out across wherever you were looking. And the night vision device, it is actually based upon gathering the starlight that comes down from the heavens, and it utilizes that light to give us your images. What we were looking for, anything on the horizon, anything that had two legs rather than four legs. Now, there were water buffalo out there that were in some of the rice paddies and fields, and of course we never fired at them, but any creatures that had two legs and were moving, we fired at. And it was the Viet Cong, or the NVA, that were moving south. What we did was we had my boats, the strike assault boats, had a four-man crew. This four-man crew would leave the mothership, the USS Benoit, say at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they would meet this. The canal was very close, the waterway that we were guarding on, and it was a 40-mile-long canal. My 20 boats were only a part of the force because there was a boat every kilometer along that 40-mile length. And they would, by the time dusk would come, they would tie up. They had a precise location where they were going to tie up. It was on their maps. They would tie up to the north bank of the canal. This is an east-west canal. They would tie up to the north bank, and they would remain there the rest of the night. And they would either be in the boat if the water level of the canal was up level almost with the ground level, or as the level of the water shrank as a result of lesser water, they would climb up and on top of the canal, set up gun mounts up on top of the canal using their starlight scope from that point. And they would be there all night long, and they'd be on watch for any attempted enemy crossing of that canal. If it was a small force that was attempting to cross, say like about maybe 6 to 10 soldiers, we would see them in advance, and we might be able to wipe them out before they even got close to the canal. We had sounding devices too that we could set out on dry land, and they would trip those sounding devices and before they got to the canal. And they would try to find a boat to try to get across some way, because this is a fairly wide canal. This Grand Canal, as we operated on, was in most locations about 80 to 120 feet wide. So they had some distance to cross to get across and move south. And it was a favorite spot for them, especially during the summer months, because the canal water was down, and they often could wade across in some locations. So what we would do is try to get them before they got to the canal, If they got to the canal, then what we would do is, if necessary, get a couple of the boats underway, get over to the area where they were attempting a crossing, and hit them from that point. And a lot of my men suffered from PTSD, as we know it. Because of the unknown that could potentially happen. Many nights, I won't say, it was maybe three or four times a week when the boat crews would go out, nothing would happen. There would be no attempted crossings at all in their particular area. Now, along that 40-mile length, there were probably two or three attempted crossings, but not necessarily at that one location. So maybe a boat crew might not even have an attempted crossing for two, three, 4 days. But then suddenly it happens. And those were the times in which it got intense. So it was the problematic. It wasn't an everyday occurrence. And atmosphere during the daytime was very serene wherever you went, because the enemy forces, if they were the Viet Cong, local indigenous people, they didn't attempt to do anything during the daytime because they knew they were overwhelmed. They couldn't escape. But so they used the nighttime to do their movement. And they knew about the, when we were coming, and they ambushed one of my boats, and they killed very, very quickly three of the crew members, and the fourth crew member, the boat captain, was able to get to the coxswain position and get the boat out of there. But the crew were hit with anti-tank weapons. A couple of them penetrated the hull. These boats would only be in country 1 year. And the reason for that was, and this is a good one, the boat engine that they put in there, and they wanted a boat engine that was quiet. Diesel engines are noisy, as we all know, very, very noisy. Every other boat in the Delta was diesel powered. All of them were. We were the only 20 boats in the Delta that used gasoline. So wherever we went, we had to take our gas station with us. And the gas station was a pontoon causeway filled with gasoline. And we had a hand crank pump, and we would pump the gas into the boats in from that pontoon, and it was moored out in the middle of the Mekong. And that was the Achilles heel, you might say, of our force. In advance, we knew that we couldn't keep the boats there indefinitely and for several years because of the fact of this gasoline problem. We'd have to take the gas with us wherever we went. During the daytime, our two helicopters that we had up there, helicopter gunships, sprayed Agent Orange to defoliate the trees and the bamboo. And of course, had we been wise enough, we would have realized that the spray of that stuff was going to be telling on people later, because these trees and bamboo would be lose their leaves in less than 24 hours. They'd fall off. And of course, the spray getting on our people caused all kinds of really insidious diseases. At least 15 of my men that I knew were dead with cancer, various forms of cancer. Mine turned out to be this neuropathy. And what it is the nerves in my fingers are gone. I don't have any feeling in my fingers anymore. And my toes and the soles of your feet. And of course, eventually it starts kind of creeping up and it takes over your stability. And you have to start using a cane to keep yourself stable, and probably will ultimately do me in, but we're just continuing on as long as we can anyway. I'm 78 years old, but still cooking along. It's something I don't really often think about or talk about, but certainly I'm proud of every day that I had in the Navy. And besides that, I enjoyed almost every minute that I was in the Navy. A great experience knowing so many people that were willing to do and to give away a lot of their free time simply for the service and doing good things for the country. Very proud to be a veteran. That's right. It's a wonderful feeling. Probably should do more than I do, but I try to do as much as I can.